Nigeria has struggled with multiple challenges, either acting independently or interacting with each other to undermine public safety. Last year, the country faced insecurity, economic difficulty, and a massive flood disaster. The prevalence of illicit arms flow and drug trafficking were also a problem. The crisis trends included disease outbreaks, declining funding for humanitarian operations, and impacts of external geopolitical events, especially the ongoing war in Ukraine. Can Nigeria better prepare to mitigate this risk originating from domestic and foreign sources? What will it take for that to happen? Hello, welcome to The Crisis Room, a podcast from Human Angle. I am Hawa Saleh. I'm here with my colleague Murtala Abdullahi. In this podcast, we look at crisis trends across the country and answer the tough questions around them. This week, we're here with a guest, the Director General of the Office for Strategic Preparedness and Resilience, Chris Ngodu. The organization is also known as the National Early Warning Center of Nigeria. Good day, Chris. Welcome to The Crisis Room.
Thank you very much for having me.
Can you tell us more about the Office for Strategic Preparedness and Resilience?
Well, the Office of Strategic Preparedness and Resilience is Nigeria's National Early Warning Center. It was established last year by this administration pursuant to ECOWAS instruments. So under ECOWAS instruments, every member state of ECOWAS is meant to establish a national early warning center. These centers are meant to identify, analyze, and address threats to human security. Human security covers a broad range of issues, ranging from climate issues, food security, energy security, economic security, governance and human rights, crime and terrorism, just the broad range of threats that, militate against the well-being of the people. So that's what we've been set up to do. We are domiciled in the office of the vice president. So we report to him. Really, that's our work, largely to identify these threats and devise ways of preventing, mitigating, and containing them. That's it.
Yeah, so basically what I'm seeing, the office looks at all these multifaceted issues that shape the human security and then makes policy recommendations. What we tend to do here also at Human Angle is that we look at these crisis trends and also make recommendations. One of our podcasts last year was looking at the crisis trend in terms of the flooding or the insecurity that has happened. And you have also studied these things. And these are the issues that have also been mentioned earlier by Hawa. So in terms of the issues that have created these trends and those that have exacerbated them, because what we see sometimes it's like a bucket that has filled. Mm-hmm. And so it's not something that just happens all of a sudden from nowhere. There's a trajectory. So how best can the country better prepare in terms of early warning to prevent or manage future threats?
Well, first is to be able to move faster with the early warning, identify trends quickly, and then galvanize the responses by getting the stakeholders together very quickly, all the relevant stakeholders, all the relevant actors. There are two dimensions of this, and I should say that those are the two dimensions of our mandate. Formally, we are called the Center for the Coordination of Early Warning and Early Response. So those two things go together. So on the one hand, you have the early warning function. On the other hand, you have the early response function. Where we have to do a lot better is to first, yes, in terms of time, we need to deal with early warning, get notice of things earlier. And then secondly, of course, be able to marshal the various stakeholders to undertake the early warning, the early response function. So last year, for example, we had the flood incidents that were quite catastrophic for many of our people. But what you had was a situation where early warning had already been provided by, NIMET, for example, the Meteorological Services Agency, as well as the Hydrological Services people as well. But early response was not as quick as it should have been for a number of reasons. But one of them is, I think, the diffuse nature of early response, which is sort of diffuse across the federal level actors, state level actors, and then local level actors. So part of our mission would be to be able to create coalitions that bring all these actors together and help us get on the same page in terms of being able to respond quickly and preemptively to this sort of crisis?
So basically what we have now is the ability to be the coordination, to coordinate parties that needs, so those who have the information that is required in terms of early warning and those who need to respond, especially at the subnational level. And I think something that you really mentioned in terms of subnational level response and even local government response, this is kind of like very, very important when you look at it. And so you mentioned in terms of the earlier you were talking about human security, and when we look at it also, does this early warning also cover things like preparing for disease outbreaks? We saw what happened with the pandemic and we'll continue to see what happened with all of these outbreaks in terms of cholera and other things. So when we talk of early warning, do we look at that? Do we look at the humanitarian crisis that's happening across Nigeria from the northeast, the northwest, the north central, and also the Niger Delta region, and potentially also the southeast because of separatist issues and also rising crime rate? Do we look at the trend, the indices, and say, okay, this is what we're heading to?
Absolutely, absolutely. So for example, if you take the floods have already happened, but you have second order consequences that will arise. So you have lots of displaced people. You have now the increased risk of disease, which is a public health risk. So that falls within our remit. So part of our mandate now, for example, is to look at the trends, look at the indices, and to be able to say to government, in partnership with an agency like the Center for Disease Control, which is one of our stakeholders and partners, that look, we are looking, we are tracking an increase in this. We are going to see a spike in cholera, for example, just because of the issues around water, sanitation, and hygiene, you know, the destruction of infrastructure and all of that. So those are the, that's the kind of preparedness. What do we do? How do we prepare for that? Then secondly, when we look at, you mentioned displacement, and I think displacement is a very loaded topic. Millions of our people have been displaced. Virtually every state of the Federation has both an IDP camp and unofficial host communities. Yes. In fact, both official
including and unofficial, the federal capital.
Including the federal capital, you know. Now, what does that mean? I think for us, one of the things that we're looking at is how these displacements are also mixing and commingling our people. There's a lot of internal migration going on now. But what does that mean for social cohesion, for example? What does that mean for communal tensions? What happens when you have an influx of people and there's increased pressure on social infrastructure? What happens when, as a result of that movement, you also have labor migration, which drives down wages? And remember that we're an informal sector economy and daily wage labor is a very dominant, you know, form of payment here, or form of our economy here, you know. What happens when those people settle in and decide they want to vote? What happens when those people settle in and decide they want to run for office? So what we see is that you're heading towards more communal tension. In our urban areas, the influx of people has an impact on urban poverty levels. It has an impact of crime levels. But these are Nigerians, so there is no question that they cannot come to those places. They are free to come to those places. So I think that what we are seeing is a transition in our geography, where our urban areas are increasingly heterogeneous. In fact, you don't have any ethnically homogeneous urban spaces anymore. And it is a transition that political leadership has to be able to shepherd us through peacefully.
Yeah.
So the work of the Early Warning Center is to identify the trends and then provide policy options, you know, so that the political leadership can guide society through this time of transition.
Yeah, so I have two back-to-back questions. And you, I like the fact that you're talking about in terms of potential long-term impact of displacement and migration. And Nigeria, we have seen the recurring conflict in terms of settlers and indigenous population because of the political tension that comes with us. So early warning, we need to prepare for these demographic changes. I think it's not just in Nigeria. We're also seeing in, for example, in the European Union, where there's a lot of conversation on the potential changes that will come due to the migration. And so the other one is in terms of, so when we talk of these gathering of data, so are we looking at intelligence fusion or information fusion to shape policies?
Both of them, both of them. Intelligence fusion, information fusion, well, closed source, open source. We are drawing from our partners, you know, a range of actors, both government actors and non-governmental actors, who a lot of whom are doing a lot of work in the early warning and early response field. But also you have the academic community, for example, where a lot of research goes on. The idea really is to pull this information and be able to create the basis for evidence-backed policy action, empirically based policy action. So we are drawing data from everywhere, the intelligence community, the academic community, the non-governmental actors, everybody really that has something to offer in this field. When we take these when we take the data, what we do is use the data to create composite strategic portraits that can aid leadership in making the decisions that would be right.
Yeah, so when we look at the one, we see strategy and strategic. And so I'm guessing that although it's an early warning, the assumption will be, oh, it's about to quench the fire or no, or to provide solutions that quickly fix the water that is leaking. Well, my guess is that we're looking at something that looks at both short, medium, and long term.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in fact, what we're hoping to do is to effect a paradigm shift from the more short-termist tactical inclinations that we have, the bias towards short-termist tactical actions, to more strategic medium to long-term actions. And the reason why that is important is that when you look at the current crisis in our country, the various issues that we are grappling with, and a lot of which you cover in your own work, whether it's the insurgency in the Northeast, the insurgency in the Northwest, even the one in the Southeast, or rising crime or herder farmer conflicts, all of those things, what you will find is that these were issues that were gestating for decades, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. And when they erupt, they tend to come to national attention at that point. But for those people that have been studying them, they will always tell you that, no, this has been ongoing for a long time, you know, 20, 30 years. So what that tells me is two things. First of all, problems don't just erupt. Yeah. They've been there. They've been gestating for a while. Why are we not able to nip them in the bud, as it were? Why are we not able to abort them before they reach full manifestation or reach critical mass? The second issue is, therefore, from the perspective of an early warner, sitting here now in 2023, I'm asking myself, what trends are emerging that don't look like much, but in the next 10, 15, 20 years, we'll also be talking about them. They will become the dominant trends shaping the security environment. And if we can identify those trends, then we are now in a position to do some more anticipation and then to provide leadership with a spectrum of options for countermeasures, either to prevent those things or to mitigate them or to contain them should they eventually manifest. So that's how we look at our role as well.
Yeah, it's quite a serious responsibility when you look at it, because potentially it could save lives. It could save scarce resources.
Absolutely.
Because, as I say, this early warning is cheaper and it's more pragmatic than the knee-jerk reaction when things have occurred.
Yeah.
And I guess it also helps us to demilitarize what we see as security response.
Absolutely.
For basically everything. So
yeah.
If we could. So basically, I'm looking at a scenario like when you have low numbers of school enrollment,
mm-hmm.
poor literacy,
mm-hmm.
and then
mm-hmm.
you could make a trajectory that this...
Absolutely. 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 And I think that, you know, you've made an interesting point about demilitarizing, you know, responses and measures. I think that that is one of the more unfortunate consequences of not preemptively dealing with things, is that you now have to increasingly rely on the military to deal with issues. The military is a specialist institution. It's a combat institution. But we've found ourselves in a situation where we are now deploying our military to undertake various roles, including constabulary roles. And as a result, our military assets are stretched thin. But to go back just a bit further, I think that all the issues, almost all the issues, I would say virtually all the issues, including the ones we regard as security issues, emanate from the fact that Nigeria is a very young country. You have about 70% of the population that under 35. And it's been our inability to provide opportunity for a population that desperately needs opportunity. That is the core. If there was a way to summarize these issues, that would be it. Now, when you put it that way, you see that that's a developmental issue.
Yes.
You know, that's a human development issue. It's a self-actualization issue. It's not a security issue, you know. But human security accommodates all of that. So that is why the work that we do tries to expand people's understanding and perception of what the real issues are. If the issue is one of creating opportunity, then we look at, we are looking at it in an entirely different, different way, which is how do you keep, how do you give young people a sense of hope, a sense of fulfillment? How do you provide for them enough opportunity, whether it's education or employment? That sort of thing. And you will find that you're now better able to stop that pipeline of young people that are being recruited either by extremists or by criminal gangs or whatever anti-state entities exist out there.
You've explained that really well. So what are the challenges to effective early warning and response, and how best can we mitigate them and strengthen human security both now and in the future?
Good question. So I'll start with the more basic ones. There is, we have encountered a problem, a conceptual problem, I think it is. People confuse early warning with other functions like reaction, crisis response, emergency response. And so sometimes we find ourselves having to explain that we are not here to replace, shall we say, emergency management authorities, for example. That's not our work. Emergency management authorities exist to respond to the emergency. That is what they do. Our work begins before that. And our work is really, in a way, to prevent things from happening, not to respond to them once they've already happened. And even the early response function that is part of our mandate is still to respond to the things before they happen, as it were. So that is preparedness. That's where the preparedness comes from. So there is that one. But secondly, and more broadly, I think there's a short-termist orientation that we have, a short-termist culture that really doesn't permit or allow people think too long term. And again, that militates against our own ability to deal with trends that stretch out across decades, or, you know, even across 5 years, 4, 7 years, 8 years. Part of it is, I would suspect, is basically cultural, in just in the way that, you know, we've evolved as a society, but institutionally as well. And even sometimes I think the nature of our political institutions, and this is by no means even a critique specifically about Nigerian institutions, any democracy with term limits has this problem, where they say because an election cycle is 4 years, an electoral cycle is essentially every 4 years. Yeah. So politicians are constrained to think of what they can do that has the most visible, high impact visibility, you know, rather than, you know, do these longer term things that are comparatively invisible. So people can't see them. And it's a problem for us because, so for example, if you talk of maybe, let's say, out of school children or even education generally, if you invest in education, then it's very likely that you're investing in an outcome as a politician that you will not see.
Exactly.
Right. Now, but the problem is you are a politician and you need to show results.
You need to build those flyovers.
Yeah, so you need to be flyovers. Everybody can see flyovers, right? But is flyovers really the things you need? No. What do we do with children? You know. So that is, I think, a challenge that we will continue to face because we're a developing democracy.
Yeah.
And it is somewhere an area of orientation that we hope to be able to, you know, help in driving a paradigm shift. So I think that those are the kind of issues, broadly speaking. Early response, the area of early response, because there are those that will tell you that, okay, even all things considered, that sometimes the early warning function is okay. It could be improved, but it's okay. Early response is more problematic. And I find that to be true. Early response functions diffuse across various agencies. So you have to deal with the issues of interagency collaboration, building trust between the agencies, building capacity, and also not just in a horizontal fashion, but also vertically as well across tiers of government. So better intergovernmental relations. You have the federal government and the state governments, and you have the local governments. all of those structures, all those institutions, being able to get rally them, you know, together so that we are all singing from the same hymn sheet. Those are the kind of challenges that we have cut out for us.
Yeah, so when you're saying we're singing from the same hymn sheet, I kind of like figure something like how the band works, where you have different instruments working
absolutely
together.
Absolutely.
And what's really clear from this conversation that we've been having over the past few minutes is that early warning is super important, and it involves utilizing the information that we have available to us, mm-hmm. and then also building of our preparedness to better protect the public.
Right.
And so thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for joining us, Chris, and sharing your thoughts on these critical issues.
Thank you for having me. Been a pleasure.
We look forward to you joining us again. This is an episode of Human Angle Crisis Room. Join us in 2 weeks for another episode. The producer is Anthony Asemota. The executive producer is Ame Sekida.